This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we have a very special guest. He's written a new book about Johnny Carson. His life with Johnny Carson is called just Johnny Carson. It's by Henry Bushkin, and he's here to talk about it. Hello.
Hi, how are you, David?
Good, how are you? You know, reading this book, I mean, it's just an amazing book. I was reading it all day yesterday, practically, and just totally fascinated by Johnny and by you. I mean, your life with him. It's just really a fascinating story.
Lots of fun, lots of interesting things, huh?
It's hard to believe I'm talking to somebody who knew Johnny Carson as well as you did. I mean, we all know him, of course, from TV and seeing him every night at 11:30. And, you know, I just think of Johnny Carson, the first thing I think of is his laugh. For some reason, that's the first thing that strikes me as what was, you know, what was memorable about him, is the way he laughed.
Well, he was the best there ever was in late night television. He's the iconic figure of American television, I think, of the 20th century. And he died all alone, David. He had no funeral. There was no memorial. He faded away after The Tonight Show. And this book has people talking about him again. He was a complicated and complex guy off the screen. Most everybody knew him on camera when the red light was on. And his personality was completely different when the red light was off.
And you know, but you know so much more about him than we know about him. I can't help but be fascinated by celebrities. I don't know why that is, and I guess I'm just like a lot of other people who are fascinated by famous people. But I mean, the way they are. If I walked down the street and I saw somebody famous, I'd be excited. That excites me. I don't know why people think I'm weird that way.
I think many people are like that. I'm like that. You know, you go and. Into a shop in Beverly Hills, and you see a famous person next to you. You, whoever you're with, you sort of nudge them and say, "Look, you know." I mean, that happens all the time.
Were you ever afraid of Johnny Carson?
No, I was never afraid of Johnny Carson. But
I mean, afraid of his moods, afraid of his anger, or
no? I was always concerned what might set him off. I was always concerned that if I saw something that wasn't right. I'd be concerned that he's going to go off in a minute and, you know, there'd be some problems. But, no, not afraid, just overly concerned because I knew his personality so well.
Now, you were with him for, I think, is it 18 years?
Yes.
Total of 18 years. How long did you actually, is that the actual amount of time you knew him, 18 years?
I met him in 1970, and I ended in 1988.
When do you think you fully knew him after 18 years?
Oh, I do. I absolutely do. And he certainly doesn't disappoint in that sense because his history is such that the end of my relationship was no different than the end of many relationships that he had.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't disappoint in terms of how it ended with me, and that was pretty much part and parcel of how he operated. All of this stemmed from his mom. He got very little emotional nurturing from her, and he suffered by that his whole life.
I mean, with me, it was my dad. It's weird how everybody's different, but I mean, my dad's the one that didn't nurture me emotionally. It was my mother that always did. So,
well, Johnny's dad was ruled by the mom. She ruled the roost, and the dad said very little. And he always deferred to his wife. And as far as Johnny was concerned, she was always the mother and he was always the son. And it was always like that. She never let him forget that she was his mother and he was her son. And that's just the way it was.
Is it like a competition thing with her? Didn't she like the fact that...
No. It was just that's who she was. I was reading yesterday, funnily enough, a comment by Dick Cavett, talking about the book, and he mentioned Johnny's mother being at some affair where Dick Cavett was, and Johnny would receive some award. And she turned to Dick Cavett and said to him, "Well, they must know what they're doing, mustn't they?"
Wow.
When they gave him the award. So that's just who she was. Very hard to get a compliment.
But she wasn't proud of the fact that he was so famous?
Oh, she might have been very proud amongst her friends, but never in front of him.
What an odd way to live. I mean, I just can't even imagine that.
It's quite sad, but that's, you know, he endured, and he wasn't, look, it didn't traumatize him. He knew where the problem stemmed. All of his friends knew the issues with his mom, and we sort of dealt with it.
I like the excitement before you first met him, your excitement the night before, the fact you couldn't sleep. And it's so cool to read that and think, wow, what would that be like to know you're going to meet Johnny Carson the next day? You know, and you don't know
what to expect. I was just a young lawyer, and it was one of those moments that was certainly not memorable because it was a very short meeting. The only thing we seemed to have in common was tennis. And the meeting, as I said, lasted 5 to 10 minutes. And he called me that night to meet him the next day at his apartment. And I was completely shocked and overwhelmed that he wanted me to represent him.
Was there any trepidation in writing the book? I mean, did you feel like you were being disloyal or anything? I mean, there's some stuff in the book that maybe he wouldn't want to come out. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
No, not one ounce of regret. The book was written, I started writing it in 2008. And the person who suggested I write the book was Ed Hoekstraten, who happened to be the lawyer that followed me in representing Johnny. He represented Johnny for 9 years. And after 3 years after Johnny died, he said to me, "Look, why don't you write the book that everybody would like to read? You knew him. I represented him for 9 years, and I didn't know him one bit." So he gave me the encouragement to write the book. So Johnny died alone. He had no funeral, and he had no memorial. Nobody spoke about him. He died, and he faded away. So we're talking about him. We're bringing him back to life. He's enjoying a renaissance.
Yeah.
Because people sort of gravitate to a complicated and complex man who he was.
So this was never a book about, you know, let's talk about the salacious side of Johnny. Let's talk about things that we don't like about him or something. It was always a loving tribute.
I wrote the book. Readers oftentimes have to take a Rorschach test to see what prejudices they bring to a book. For example, if you were a diehard Johnny Carson fan and watched him every night, your parents may have watched him every night, for example, and they may love him as the guy on television and may not want to know about his private life because it's not the same guy on television.
So right.
They would dislike the book because they'll read things that they don't feel comports with the image that they always had of Johnny on the screen. And for that, I'm sorry, and the only thing I can say is don't read the book.
Right.
But if you want to know how complicated and interesting and fascinating and smart he was and powerful, I think you'll enjoy the book.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed knowing the little quirks about him. Everybody's quirky. Everybody has a temper. I mean, it's not surprising that Johnny had a temper. It's not surprising
Look, every superstar you could think of has tempers. If things don't go right, if they're having to be on the set and things go wrong, they're not going to be happy. Johnny was the same way. He had a very short fuse, as most superstars do, on certain things. For example, he was never late in his life from radio. If he had to be someplace at 8 o'clock, he'd be there 10 to 8.
Wow.
But if you showed up at 5 after 8, he'd be wholly pissed.
Right.
That's just who he was.
And that's not something that we, you know, is upsetting. I mean, I would, if I were late to anything, I'd be embarrassed,
well,
too.
That's from radio days. He got his training in radio.
I mean, he was such a natural comedian. I mean, a natural. I mean, you saw. It seemed like what you saw on TV was really the way he was.
He started out as the great Carsoni, as doing magic acts. So when you do magic, you do sleight of hand. You need great patter. You need great dialogue to divert people's attention. And he sort of honed that skill and then carried it on through radio and then early television, and by the time he got the Tonight Show, he was pretty much a seasoned pro.
I didn't realize he was on radio. Oh, interesting.
Oh, for many years he was on radio.
So what, your whole 18 years, I mean, it had to be very stressful at times. I mean, obviously you talked about...
Of course it was stressful.
What was the most stressful thing that happened?
Well, I think probably the most, well, there were several. Any time he went through a divorce with his second wife or his third wife, it was always stressful because he was always on edge because he was always such a big target. Those circumstances were stressful. And the negotiations with NBC in 1980, when we found ourselves in a lawsuit with NBC fighting for ownership of The Tonight Show, that's probably the most stressful business-wise, but fortunately we came out on top, and Johnny obtained ownership of The Tonight Show and died worth, I think, around $500 million. So he was a very successful guy and a very private guy, and yet he died alone, and that's a shame.
Did he have a lot of friends? I mean, you were his friend.
Yeah, he had many close friends who... were basically what I would call civilians, people you've never heard of. He didn't hang out traditionally with show business types. He hung out with friends. His tennis pro was a good friend of his. His stockbroker was a good friend of his. The guy who did all his audio visual equipment were good friends, and we would hang out all the time.
Right. But the way you say he died alone, the way there weren't any friends around him, there weren't any family around him, it struck me. That's why I asked the question, I guess, because I think...
Well, it struck me, too, but again, he died in 2005, and I had left in 88, so that's 17 years later,
mm-hmm.
And he had separated from his fourth wife 2 or 3 years before he died. I think basically he was on his boat. He built a big yacht, and I think basically he was on that with the crew.
I remember seeing him. Every once in a while you'd see a picture of him walking along the docks or, you know, Johnny. He seemed to like the water a lot.
Well, he was suffering from emphysema. He was a big smoker. That led to emphysema. That led to serious health problems. He could no longer play tennis. He was no longer physically active. He was on many drugs. And he just became a different person, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And people would recognize him on the street, he seemed like he was very polite, but he seemed like he didn't want to be in the limelight.
He was the most gracious and polite person if he wanted to be. If you came up to him, we were having dinner at a restaurant, and you said, Johnny, could I get a picture? Who knows what would happen? He wouldn't be happy being disturbed over dinner.
Right.
But he'd be happy to sign autographs. He posed for pictures on occasion. He wasn't isolated by any means, but he wasn't that gregarious.
As he became more popular as the years went by with the show, did it become harder and harder to keep away from the public eye for him?
No, he always... Look, he hosted the Academy Awards for 5 years. Some people say it was the best 5 years in the Academy history when he did it. He did many benefits, many black tie affairs. He was out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Those were mostly charitable events where you showed up and it's a function and he would appear or be honored. But he did that all the time. But those were professionally social events, if you know what I mean. They weren't social events where he's just going out with friends.
Right. I mean, the sad part is when you guys, you know, weren't friends anymore, and I felt bad for you. I felt like you got the short shrift there. I mean, you didn't deserve the way he treated you, but, you know...
That's the way his relationships ended. You know what? Writing the book, it became clear to me that at the end I was no different than anybody else. It didn't matter if it was a manager who got him the Tonight Show. He had two managers, Bruno and Shields, Al Bruno and Tom Shields, and he fired them shortly after he had gotten ownership of shortly after he became host of The Tonight Show, because something happened, he didn't like it, and he fired them. He fired producers off the show, he fired other managers. This was all before I even met him.
So, I mean, it was a pattern with him, I guess is what you're saying. I mean, that's just the way he was.
When he ended a relationship, it was over. There was never going back.
That's really rough. I mean, when you lose a friend, I mean, that's a very hard feeling. I mean, I know what that's like, and it's horrible to go through something like that. I mean, that's just
who he was. When he divorced his second wife, Joanne, he never spoke to her again. When he divorced wife number three, he never spoke to her again, at least as far as I know. And the same thing with former managers, former agents, former lawyers. So he was pretty consistent with all the relationships that he terminated.
Right. Now, Alexis, she was still with him when he died?
They were separated long before he died.
Oh, they were separated.
Yes.
Right. So that, and how long did that relationship last?
They were married in 1987. I was on the honeymoon cruise with them with my girlfriend at the time, and that started in 80. They married in 87, and I think again they separated 2 or 3 years before he died.
What are some of the things you liked most about Johnny? I mean, tell us what the things that really made him special to you.
What made him so special to me was how complicated and complex he was and how tightly wound he was, and yet he was able to focus all his energies on that show. So when he did that show, he threw everything out, and when that red light went on, he was the brilliant Johnny Carson that everybody knew. And that's the fascinating thing. He was so good. And so troubled at certain times, and yet so good.
But the comedic stuff we saw on TV, was he like that with you too when you were alone with him?
Oh, sure. Well, if he wanted to be, he was the funniest guy in the room. You know, if you were sitting around in Las Vegas after the show in the lounge, and there was comedians sitting around a table and musicians and sitting around and jokes were flying back and forth. If Johnny wanted to be, he could be certainly the funniest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he was that good.
I mean, the scene that you described with Tom Snyder, just, you know, it just floors me when I read that. I think, wow. He seemed to didn't like the competition around him.
It's not the competition. That evening, it was the Emmy Awards night, and Johnny's writing staff, and Johnny was a member of the writing staff, didn't win in the Emmy for like the umpteenth year in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny had hosted the awards. And so we're at Chasen's, and he's upset that they didn't win again. He's with his producer and with Ed McMahon and myself and the director of the show. And everybody is sort of like aggravated, and everybody is, I can't say everybody, but Johnny certainly was drinking, and Tom Snyder was at the other end of the room drinking and staring at one another, and it resulted in ugliness that fortunately subsided about 5 in the morning.
Right. It sounded like some nights Johnny didn't know when to quit. Johnny just wanted to party all night.
Well, no, that was in New York. He was drinking pretty good in New York up to 72. When he was in California, that subsided a great deal. And there were moments, like the Chasen's moment, that he was drinking too much. But that wasn't happening with any frequency.
Right. I mean, you traveled a lot with him. You got to see every side of Johnny, which, I mean, I guess a lot of people would be jealous of to some extent.
Well, hopefully not jealous to the extent that I tried to describe all of our, you know, adventures, or at least what I thought would be interesting to the reader.
Oh, it's fascinating.
So they could share it with me.
It's fascinating. I mean, and as we go along, we wonder, like you did, how he's going to react to these things. What's going to happen? What's he going to say? And, you know, how's this situation going to be settled? And that's what.
Right. I'll give you a good example. We were backstage at the inaugural event, and Bob Hope hands Johnny some material and saying, here, these are some lines that my writers wrote up. I thought you might use some of them. And Hope walks away, and Johnny turns to me, and he says, the nerve of this guy to think I need his material to go on. You know, he got really upset at Bob Hope for giving him material that was, to Johnny, an insult.
Right.
Others might think, hey, how cool is that? Bob Hope gave me some material.
Isn't it as fascinating that, you know, depending on who it is, they would look at it differently? I mean, Johnny was...
Sure. If it was you and me, we'd be thrilled that Bob Hope gave us some jokes.
Do you think Johnny ever felt like he was in competition with other people, though?
Not a bit.
I mean, he must have known he was talented. I mean, obviously the man had talent.
Not only he knew that his show was supporting the network, because in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, NBC was in last place by a long shot, and he had no lead-ins. He had they had horrible ratings, and at some point, he put it to NBC. Imagine any of the late night talk show hosts taking on a network today. It would be absurd.
Yeah, maybe Letterman.
Johnny took on a whole network. His show was making them in those days $50 million a year. And they were paying him $25 million, right? So he was making a lot of money for the network, and he really dominated the network. You can't say that about any of these talk show hosts these days.
And, you know, another thing with Johnny is Johnny himself was funny. I mean, look at Letterman. I don't think Letterman's all that funny by himself. I mean, that's just my opinion. But I don't watch Letterman. It seems like everything around Letterman is funny. But Letterman himself, I don't think, is funny. I think Johnny was naturally funny. I mean, Johnny...
I think part of what you're saying points out the brilliance of Johnny and the inadequacies of the current crop of talk show hosts. We talk about Carson and how brilliant he was, and I'm not sure Letterman or Leno or Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel would like hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we say how brilliant he was, that means they're not quite so brilliant.
Well, I think that's true. But
yes, well, it's all fascinating to me that Dick Cavett, Dick Cavett, of course.
Oh, yeah.
He commented, I saw it yesterday, that he said, I rather liked the book. And it was kind of interesting to me because I haven't heard from any of the late-night talk show people about the book, because I don't think they know what to say about the book, because anything that you might construe as negative, they think is heresy. So David Letterman, I think, would think, oh, I can't mention this book. It talks badly about Carson. Of course, it doesn't talk badly about Carson. It just recites what our life was like. But nonetheless, we talk about how brilliant Carson was, and all of a sudden Letterman doesn't look so good.
I mean, I guess some of these celebrities want to appear like they're perfect. They don't want people to think badly of them. They want people to think they're always nice, they're always kind, they're always doing good things for people. But you know, that's not the way it is.
Didn't David Letterman have a run-in with one of the talent coordinators on his show?
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Having an affair? I mean, this is you know, then he has a heart attack, and then he has this, and then he has that. Johnny, in those days, you know, Johnny was pretty discreet.
I'm sure
he had affairs,
mm-hmm.
but he was pretty discreet. And, of course, there were no cell phones and camera phones and things like that.
Oh, Johnny would have hated that. It's a good,
right.
Probably a good thing there wasn't.
Yeah, of course. But the thing is, infidelity in Hollywood never hurt anybody's career. It really never did. So, infidelity, Johnny was no different from Frank Sinatra or Bob Hope.
Warren Beatty, and look at Warren Beatty.
Look, I'm out of sight, out of mind with those guys. You know, that's just the way it was. Think of rock and rollers today. Think of rock and rollers in the past on the road and groupies who followed them. Well, Johnny didn't have groupies, and he didn't have an entourage. It was me and him when we traveled. But he was an attractive guy. He was very successful, good-looking.
Charming.
Charming.
One would
elegant,
say.
And
rich, too.
and had his fair share of ladies over the years. But again, many superstars have done that. Johnny was no different, no better. Certainly no worse.
Did he read reviews of himself? Was he a big reader in general?
Oh, every morning. Every morning, that's what he would do. I mean, he would comb through newspapers, he would comb through magazines, he would read. He was a great fan of Carl Sagan, the astronomer. Great
mm-hmm.
friends, the author and astronomer. Johnny was an astronomer. Very few people knew that. He had an observatory built at his home in Bel Air.
I wonder why that never came out anywhere.
Well, because that's not interesting.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Affairs that he had 43, or that his wife had 43 years ago seem to be interesting to people, but the fact that he was an astronomer passes over everybody's head.
Right. I mean, I mean, to me, Johnny will always be the person I saw on TV. I mean, that's who I mean, I don't care about his private life. That's him. That's not me. That's nothing to do with me.
No, I understand that, but yeah. As you say, he was so good and he was so important that we deserve to know more about him. The public really does. He was the best. So what's wrong with learning about who the person really was?
Nothing, absolutely nothing.
Right.
And
it is sad that he died alone, and I regret that. And I think it's good that we talk about him now.
Right. I should mention the books from Houghton Mifflin Company. They've provided me a copy to read and enjoy to a tremendous amount. I mean, it's just a tremendously fascinating book. I mean, it's one of those books you just sit and you can just enjoy for a whole night. I mean, it's like, wow, this is a side.
And yet I've had, I look at Amazon reviews. There's been enough critical reviews, the New York Times, Janet Maslin, and every major publication has reviewed the book. But I look at the Amazon reviews, and I saw one this morning that said, this is a horrible book. Bushkin obviously never knew Carson, didn't know anything.
Really?
And that person gave me one star on Amazon.
How odd.
So some people, no matter if you say anything negative about a superstar that they adore, all of a sudden you're a heretic.
Did you ever see Johnny cry?
Once. That was when I first started representing him, when we broke into this apartment and he found his wife was having an affair with somebody. Yeah, he sobbed that night, as I would have, as I think you would have, or anybody would have. If we find an apartment that our wife was having an affair with somebody, we wouldn't be happy.
Why do you think he trusted you? I mean, it seems like he trusted you pretty quickly. Why do you think that was?
Because in 1970, when I, unbeknownst to me, when I met him, his life was pretty much in shambles. The marriage was awful on both sides. His financial condition was horrible. He had a manager that created Johnny Carson Apparel for him, and the manager owned it with the apparel with Hartshafter and Marks, and Carson owned none of it. His show was having problems with the producer at the time. So he had nobody he could trust. And it just happened he met a young lawyer, and he figured, well, maybe I could trust this guy. And it lasted for 18 years.
Which, with Johnny Carson, is a long time.
I think you'll find, I mean, I just realized this a couple of months ago, that it was probably the longest relationship he had in his life.
Now, other
than Ed McMahon.
Yeah, I was just going to mention Ed McMahon. How did they become to be connected? How did he get to be on the Tonight Show? I mean, his laugh, obviously, was what was one of the most appealing things about him on the show. But
well, they worked together on Who Do You Trust? A CBS show, and it was a natural transition for Ed to come over to the Tonight Show, and they figured out the roles pretty early on, and it lasted certainly for 30 years.
Right. What was your first impression of Ed McMahon when you met him?
When I first met him, he was it's about 3 in the morning, and I met him for about 30 seconds, so I impression of it when I first met him was a non-event because I saw him for 30 seconds.
Right.
But look, over the years, I realized how good friends these guys were. And socially, their paths diverged a little bit in California because of Johnny's status as like the top of the A-listers. But they always remained good friends.
Right. And the whole Joan Rivers situation, reading about that last night, I was reading that toward the end of the book about the whole Joan Rivers thing. And, it's so interesting the way that all played out. I mean, did Edgar really call? I mean, what all that stuff? And I think to myself,
I don't know. When you say did Edgar really call? Did he really call who? That I can't tell you. He certainly didn't call me.
Right. I mean, the whole thing is just fascinating. I mean, and Joan Rivers, who's still big today. I mean, you still see her on TV today, and it's amazing her career that it has lasted as long as it has. I mean, I think she's very talented, but I don't necessarily look forward to seeing. I think she's a little too outspoken for me, but that's just the way I don't like. But you know, a lot of people like the fact that she's outspoken.
She was Johnny's permanent guest host at the time they had their dust up. Right. And Johnny's point of view was always, she's terrific for a week. Because a week in those days meant that she would be on the air for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And she would practice her act 2 weeks ahead of time before spending the week on the air. So she had plenty of time to practice what she was going to do for the 4 days.
Right.
But Johnny's point of view is, she could never sustain every night. Just couldn't do it. She's too rough. She's too caustic for people on an ongoing basis, and it proved that he was right.
Mm-hmm.
Because the show lasted, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, and then it was off the air.
Right. That was her show, you mean?
Her show, yeah.
Yeah. So, she is a bit rough. I mean, I have trouble watching on a regular, had trouble watching on a regular basis. I just, you know, she would attack people, like, and I would think, wow, it would make me cringe, you know?
Well, and that's rough. You know, it's okay a night or two or three, but a month or two in a row, no good, and that proved her undoing.
Did you get along with Johnny's wife for the most part? I know your wife was very good friends with one.
Well, the second wife, of course, I met when they were about to get divorced. His third wife, Joanna, yes, we were all very good friends.
There's no...
And that Joanna Carson was the wife who was, I think, most instrumental in his transition to sort of Hollywood society from New York. In New York, he was sort of a roustabout, but in California, when he married Joanna, they became established members of the A-list.
When you think back on Johnny, do you have any anger at all at him?
Oh, sure. Moments, sure. But the way I look at it, for example, if you take the break-in and the sobbing and that the emotions of that evening, it's tragic. But tragedy plus a lot of years in between equals some comedy. And so that particular chapter I wrote sort of in wanting people to have fun with it. It was horrible then.
Yeah.
But writing about it and reading about it 43 years later, I think we could have some fun with it and yet see how tragic it was at that moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it is sad. I mean, when I think about, after reading this book, I feel sad for Johnny. I feel like, you know, his life wasn't all it should have been. It wasn't all, even though he had enormous wealth and people around that he could love, that it just seems like he had trouble loving people completely and trusting people completely.
Okay, so you could think of Citizen Kane and Orson Welles and think of that movie where the opening is in this mansion and says no trespassing because he died all alone. You know,
mm-hmm.
He was all alone. Johnny was on that boat all by himself with a skeleton crew when he died.
Wow, that's sad. I mean, that's definitely sad to think about anybody.
Sad,
being alone.
But it's certainly good to talk about him and his brilliance and even his complicated and complex life. All interesting.
What did, I mean, did he ever watch his show afterwards?
No, he would never watch the show unless there was a moment, you know. He might call me and say, watch the show tonight because watch this bit. But on the whole, he wouldn't watch it every night. He would hardly ever watch it.
Was he ever critical of himself? Did he ever say, you know, oh, I really blew it tonight or something?
After every show, the producer and the director and Johnny would meet, and they would go over the events of the evening. So every night, they would be critical of the performance or happy about the performance, whatever the case may have been.
When you watch the show, and I will always remember this, just the rapport that Johnny would have with his guests was memorable a lot of times, be it a woman, being a man. I mean, I remember the rapport he had with Michael Landon. I mean, he and Michael were...
They were great pals, and I think that was one of the really sad moments for Johnny when he died.
Absolutely. But you could feel that rapport he had with his guests, and I think that's what makes... Partly what makes a great host is that rapport. Now, I mean, Letterman hits on the women. I mean, you watch him hit on women, and it's kind of, to me, it makes me feel kind of uncomfortable a little bit. But that seems to be the growing thing nowadays. Hosts that hit on their guests, you know. I guess it makes for better ratings.
I can't comment on that, but I can certainly tell you that Johnny... Johnny's office, so you'll understand, at NBC, was maybe 500 yards away from where the Tonight Show offices were. He literally had nothing to do with the staff. And his producer would come to see him, and his director would come to see him, and occasionally a writer would come to see him, but he was pretty much isolated from the entire...
Is that the way he wanted it?
That's absolutely the way he wanted it. Indeed, I heard a story after I wrote the book of a Tonight Show talent coordinator who worked for him for 10 years, and she never had a conversation with him in 10 years.
Wow.
Okay, now how unbelievable is that to work for somebody for 10 years and you never spoke to him? She said, you know, he smiled at me. And he walked by, he winked at me like that's his hello, but she never spoke to him.
Do you think he generally liked people?
That's a good question. I think generally he'd prefer to be by himself.
Where do you think that came from? Was it just because of his upbringing, his mother?
I think so. The mother is what I would describe as Midwestern Gothic.
Midwestern Gothic.
And aloof, and you can't see any warmth emanating, and that's what happened, and that trait, unfortunately, passed down to him.
Do you feel that there was something you could have done to prevent the breakup of your friendship?
No, I don't. The relationship ended because. In 1980, we had succeeded in not only getting ownership of The Tonight Show, but getting the network to agree to give us 5 series that we got to produce. The new Carson Company got to produce.
Yeah, that...
And after some initial failures, we started having some real success. And the failures, coupled with the success and the business growing... was really unpleasant for Johnny. He wanted less time spent on the business,
yeah. And
more time just spending on The Tonight Show and not bothering about business affairs. And so our paths diverged at some point. I wanted to grow this business, which is normal, and he wanted to shut it down. And we had 100 people working for us, and of course he was the boss, so I refused to shut it down. Fired me, and he hired Ed Hoogstraten. That was the lawyer that followed me, and Hoogstraten shut all the businesses down.
Well, you were betrayed, though.
I wouldn't use that word.
Not by Johnny. I mean by the other.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean by Johnny. No, I think.
Right. But that's typical Hollywood. You know, that's big time showbiz where it's rough and tumble. And lawyers and agents and managers, they do this all the time.
I mean, they convinced him that you were the bad guy, and so it's hard to blame Johnny, and they were trying to convince him that.
Well, it's hard to blame Johnny, but for Johnny, it's my belief that he just needed a final excuse, because we had problems for months where I was very reluctant and resisting shutting things down, and he was getting increasingly... upset with me for not doing it. So the end was really inevitable, but as you can imagine, you never could experience the end until you actually go through it.
All right. Did you watch the last show, the last Tonight Show?
No.
You never had any desire to see it?
No.
Because I always wondered how it affected Johnny, in what way it affected him. Did you ever hear?
I think he was very unhappy with the goings-on at the end. So I think he felt, in many ways, betrayed. I'm not sure by whom, but I think he felt betrayed by either the network or Leno. And, of course, after he left in 92, you never heard from him. You know, you never heard from him.
He became like a recluse.
He retired and faded away. I would say faded away. And all that means is he had nothing left to give to the public because he had given it all on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it? And I mean, to me, I don't know if there was any better host than Johnny.
I think conventional wisdom from all of from Letterman and Leno and so on is that Carson was the best, the absolute best.
I mean, you look at some of the hosts have things that make them better, make them maybe little things that they do are better than what Johnny does. But Johnny had an all-around likability about him. I mean, you couldn't help it.
I think you have to measure perhaps in star power. You know, the way I would describe it is if you put all of the star power together of Leno and Letterman and Fallon and Kimmel and Conan O'Brien and so on, I don't think you equal Carson.
I think so, too. I mean, they all have their own little quirks, and I guess that's what makes talk show hosts so successful. Their little quirks, things that they do or things that they say or segments on their shows. And what was your favorite segment on The Tonight Show?
Oh, I think, other than bombastic Bushkin jokes, I think I liked the Karnak bits the best.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And you can see how it's been repeated with other people. I mean, other people have copied it.
Absolutely. And, so and some of the Karnak lines will go down. It's, you know, just historically great lines.
What was a typical day for him like on The Tonight Show? I mean, what time would he get in the morning? What time would... I know they taped, about 5:30 in the afternoon?
They taped 5:30 and he never got in the morning, I assure you. He would probably get to the studio about 2 o'clock, and the show taped at 5:30.
So what would he do between 2 and 5:30?
Well, as soon as he got in, the cue card guy, or he would look at the monologue material. He would look at what the writers had written up, and he would make his edits. And if he had to have any discussion with writers, he would. And then once he zoned in on the monologue, which was the most important thing to him. Then he would see who the guest list is, freshen up on whatever he had to know about the guest, and if there was a skit or sketch, he'd do rehearsals until he was ready to go on at 5:30.
So he never spoke to the guest beforehand.
I think that's conventional wisdom, but I'm certain. There were many he talked to ahead of time.
I mean, I think of Jimmy Stewart. I know he was friends with Jimmy Stewart, too.
Sure.
Jimmy Stewart was always funny on that show, too.
Look, there are many people that were on there that were really his friends. Jimmy Stewart would be one of them, you know?
Were there ever any guests that Johnny had on his show that he, afterwards, he said, I'll never have that person on again?
Well, I believe so, sure. I think some people came on his show drunk. I think some people came on his show and fell asleep. I think some people came on his show and were on drugs.
Really?
Yeah, many of whom never came back.
You could write a whole other book about the guests on the show, you know?
Well, I couldn't do that, but maybe somebody else could.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't there that often.
You didn't see a lot of the tapings?
No, I...
You had a lot to do.
The Tonight Show was not my bailiwick. You know, there were producers, directors, and so on. I took care of the business end of it, but I didn't have to be there on the creative end at all.
So compare yourself before you met Johnny and after you met Johnny. What was the difference? What were some of the big differences?
I became a big shot. I mean, just representing a big star. Like, imagine if a young lawyer today was representing Brad Pitt, a guy 25 years old. I mean, imagine the power this guy would have by virtue of his client. That was me, thrust into this at a very early age. And
Well, how did the 18 years affect you emotionally?
Well, I lost a marriage. I lost a lot of friends, and it affected me greatly emotionally then. Looking today, you know, it's a different life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look back on it with regret or envy. I look back at it as a different life. It's an interesting life, but not my life today.
Now, are his wives, ex-wives, still alive?
I believe they're all alive.
Wow, all three of them.
Four.
I knew when I said three, it was going to be four, but they're all still alive. That's amazing. And Johnny was how old when he died?
I think he was 80.
Oh, he's in his 80s?
89.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Is it safe to say?
Maybe it was 79. Maybe it was 79.
Yeah.
He was born in 25.
25.
And died in 05.
So he was
just about 80.
He was almost 80 years old.
Yeah.
I think, and you and I both agree on this, that there'll never be another one like Johnny Carson. I mean, there'll just never be anybody like him. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Is there anybody that you have seen on TV that comes close?
I have to go back and tell you that I left in 88, but prior to my leaving in 88, the guy that we thought had the most talent, if you will, to carry on was Gary Shandling. The problem that we had with Gary Shandling was Johnny, because Shandling said, okay, when is Johnny going to leave so I know when I might, you know, get the shot at this? And Johnny never, we could never give Shandling a date, and then he went on to do other things, which I never blamed him for. So Shandling, Jay Leno was the permanent guest host when I left in 88. Mm-hmm. So he was an obvious choice. And David Letterman worked for us when I left. So he wasn't an obvious choice because he had the show following Johnny's.
Gary Shandling, I never would have thought you'd bring him up. I never was a big Gary Shandling fan. I don't know. He just never appealed to me much. But
well,
I guess
each his own, right?
Exactly, each his own. what one person may like is another person. I mean, I never got the appeal of Jay Leno, but you know.
There you go.
I mean, but I've watched his show. I enjoy more the guest than I do him. I don't know why that is, but that's just.
In Johnny's case, I think you enjoyed the questions and the looks and the moments
and the laughter.
Yeah, and the moves he had and everything, which the audience loved. You know, he was like part of their family for so long.
Johnny could speak to anybody. Johnny could speak to the littlest person out there, and you felt like you knew him when you watched the show. You felt like you knew a lot about him. I mean, you felt like he was a regular guy that you were listening to, that you were laughing with, that you were laughing along with. And I don't feel that way a lot about a lot of other hosts. I don't think there's any that I feel that way about. I mean, I kind of like Jimmy Fallon, and the reason I like Jimmy Fallon is because he seems like a regular guy. He seems like if you met him on the street, you could say hello to him and shake his hand, and he would be very gracious.
Well, Jimmy Fallon, of course, is taking the Tonight Show back to New York, where the show started in with Carson in 1962. So it's sort of going back to its roots, you might say.
The likability factor with Jimmy Fallon, I think, is high. With me, it is. I just like him. I just like the way he is. And I can't say that about Letterman or Leno or even Conan. I'm not a big Conan fan either. So, and Jimmy Kimmel, I just find, ugh, I don't know. I think, you know, what he does, a lot of people like. I mean, he appeals to the men who, you know, because he has such pretty women on. You know, he doesn't appeal to me all that much. But,
well, again, you know, it's to each his own. But in Johnny's day, he ruled the airwaves. You know, he had 15 to 20 million people watching him a night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's phenomenal.
Today's fractured network and cable and podcasts and the like, it's probably not conceivable that one could command the audience that he did when he did.
Absolutely, absolutely. He left a legacy behind that'll never be filled. The shoes that'll never be filled in my mind. I mean, you look now. Every time you turn around, there's a new talk show host coming out. I mean, Queen Latifah, and the list goes on and on and on. Every year, it's somebody else, and they just don't have what Johnny had.
And again, we're talking about him. He's entitled to a renaissance. He was that good.
Mm-hmm.
He faded away. It's gratifying to me that we're talking about him and people are taking note of him, and that people are reading the book and learning about how interesting and fascinating and complex he was.
Have you heard from his ex-wives at all? Have they made any comments about the books?
No. I heard through the New York Post, for example, that Joanne Carson denied that was her apartment. She said that was really her friend's apartment that she was using. Hmm. She could say whatever she likes. But I didn't hear directly from her. I heard indirectly from Joanna Carson that her main concern with the book was how she looked in the photos. And I don't know if she ever read the book,
right.
But I think you'll agree that she looks good in the photos.
I think it's interesting. He had two J-wives.
Three.
Oh, three. Wow.
The first wife was Joan.
Oh, okay.
The second wife was Joanne. And the third wife was Joanna.
How about that? Is there some kind of connection there? Well, I'm certainly glad you wrote the book. And I certainly thoroughly enjoyed it. And I applaud you for doing it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
It's been absolutely fascinating. I mean, we could talk all day. And I really appreciate all the time you've given me.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm delighted to share some of these experiences with you.
Great. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Dick.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you. And we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.